Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 154.
Hello, Governor.
Hello.
I'm also the voice of a Frito-Lay's commercial for barbecue chips. They wouldn't let me do that in a British accent, despite my repeated insistence.
You were, really?
Yeah.
Can you repeat any of the copy that you sent?
Yeah. I did something like, I did something like, how delicious? This delicious. Like something like that. I can't remember exactly. Frito-Lays, make life flavorful. Like something that. So look for it. I'll try and tweet it out. It's embarrassing. Hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we lament the fact that we're recording between the first and the second debate. But I'm your host, Nagin Farsad, and I'm here to tell you not to worry because we have like 27 years worth of more primary action, and we'll be reacting to all sorts of shit and growing old together before November 2020. Today, we're going to talk about first-nighter Democrats. We'll also talk about the anti-college movement, and we'll also talk about how the British are banning sexist ads and they're doing it in an accent. Thank you very much. I am so excited by this panel. Look, they haven't done as many potato chip commercials as I have, right?
True.
But they're excellent. And I've known both of them for a bit here. You've seen him on HBO and on Showtime. His podcast is called I'll Leave You With This, to which I am a proud subscriber. I've seen him perform live, and it's just so fucking fun. It's so fucking fun. Wow. You guys, it's Justin Chafin. Hey,
yay.
Dustin.
So happy to be here.
Joining us again on the show, he is a veteran of Fake the Nation, but he's a young,
three tours
sprightly
of duty
man. he is a two-time guest of the John McEnroe show.
There it is.
No, but he's been on so many fucking things. And in fact, my very first job was directing him in a Comedy Central thing. It was like literally my first ever real job in show business.
Which thing was that?
It was The Watch List in 2010.
Oh my God.
I know. Wow. I'm so embarrassed. Yeah.
You guys remember that, right? Nobody remembers
that. Remembers that. Also, it was a pilot that never made it. Made it. Here's the fucking, I'm burying the lead here, you guys, because this man has a new album. And it's called 60% Joking, and it is currently available. And I am so excited. And if you haven't seen his stand-up, you've made mistakes in your life. You guys, it's Christian Finnegan.
Yay. Thank you, Nagin. That is a very kind intro.
Oh, no, but get thee to an iTunes or a fucking, where else do people download, Anne?
Well, they download, that's, the streaming, the
downloading. I don't think they should do streaming. I think they should fucking download.
Well, here's the deal. If you don't want to download, please do understand that if you do download, it does genuinely make the person more money if you download it.
It does.
Just,
it literally
does. Let's be very
does.
Clear about this. Like, by a scale of, 1,000.
Right.
But if you are going to stream, whatever. I live in 2019. I get it. Just, you don't even need to listen to it. Just click play on it and then leave the room. Mute it. I don't care. I still get credit for you having streamed it. So.
But download it. Okay. or download it and stream it. Like, spend an afternoon trying to enrich Christian Finnegan is my whole point. Okay, I'm so excited you guys are here. Thank you. And this was, and let's get into it because I'm all hepped up with topic number one. Okay, so we're in that liminal space between night one of the Democratic debates and night two of those same debates.
Wait, was it debate last night?
Get the fuck out of my studio. So we don't know how the second debate will pan out, but we do know that there are a lot of candidates in the field. I mean, there's like a lot of candidates in the field, although it's like not enough to make it a party, like legitimately fun. And yet it's like too many for a functional orgy. You know what I mean?
It's like when you're in the small karaoke room. And it's like too many people for the small room, but it would feel absurd in the giant,
expensive room. That's exactly what it is. But also orgy.
Yes, orgy. I don't know how you do karaoke, but.
Okay, so you guys, s'il vous plaît, I'm just adding languages to what was a language-filled evening.
Accent less effective on that one.
tell me just like your initial thoughts, Dustin.
Terrified. I think, you know, it's
so interesting.
Every time, you know, de Blasio would talk, I would just get outraged. I was like, come on, this guy. I think he's going to be if he were to get the nomination, he'd be the only Democrat in history to lose New York. Like, every time he's talking, I'm like, fix the E train, you know, like every time he would say something. And then he dropped his son all the time. It's like, shut up, dude. We get it.
Wow. I had a completely different reaction to de Blasio, though. I've been a de Blasio apologist on this show before. So,
I was on the de Blasio train. And I mean, I will vote for him again. Like, I thought he actually did fine in terms of, like, you know, when you're polling at negative zero, like, you can just throw haymakers and
say whatever. Yeah.
And I get that. I'm offended by the fact that he's running, period. Everything he says, I agree with. But there's nothing he's saying that five other people wouldn't say. There's nothing he's going to do that Elizabeth Warren wouldn't do better. You know, and so why are you even running? You know,
I think we need
a mayor. I can't go a year and a half without a fucking mayor.
All of those candidates, basically. There's any one candidate doesn't need to fucking be running, you know? Biden doesn't need to be running. Bernie doesn't need to be running. Like, no one needs to fucking be running in such a crowded field. So I feel that way about everyone. And I feel like the intensity of that feeling towards de Blasio is unfair, but I mean, I get it. He came into the race pretty late. With the subway, it's a homeless problem.
Come on, it's a state
issue. It's so complicated the way the MTA works, and it's like something that's very difficult for him to control. So I'm such a de Blasio apologist.
You really are. Well, I had no idea.
I'm not even like a huge de Blasio fan. But
Who's his constituency? Who is the de Blasio constituency?
Progressives. I've said this before, universal pre-K. That's a real thing.
That have some sort of facial recognition problem that they don't see
Wage. That's a real thing. Okay. Forgetting de Blasio.
Yeah.
This is stupid. One?
I mean, I think probably Castro.
Castro nailed
it. Interesting.
Absolutely.
I think he's the, you know, first of all, he kind of was the only one kind of who got a scalp.
Yeah.
Essentially, you know, I mean, I you're right. I agree that who won is a little silly.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
But I would say he's the one of that sort of second tier who elevated himself and made people be like, who's this guy?
In a not annoying way. And was it immigration in particular? Because so for those of you who didn't watch, Castro had a little moment with Beto O'Rourke. And they both spoke Spanish at one point in the movie. About immigration, and it was like a tense back and forth, and it was over whether or not to decriminalize crossing the border, and Castro thinks that it should be decriminalized, and O'Rourke thinks it should be decriminalized for asylum seekers. Do you agree that Castro had a winning night?
I do, and unfortunately, I'm a huge Beto guy, and I think a lot of us kind of respond to people that are kind of like us in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm from Texas, and like, he's from Texas. He was in a punk band. I hate all that, you know, Texas stuff. So I feel like I respond to him.
Yeah,
but he was so nervous; he didn't know what to do with his hands. Like, he would just, you know, he just. But I felt like later on he figured things out, you know. But I think he's just one of those guys that, like, you know, it's going to take him time. But I think he's going to be an amazing candidate one day. I just don't.
Yeah,
I don't think
he's a brawler.
Eventually, I think he'll get there.
He's a nice guy.
But what did he ever want to run? Yeah, he was pushed a little bit after the Senate race.
Yeah. I think there was just – there was no clear thing for him to do. John Conran, he doesn't think he has a chance against – he thought he had a chance against Cruz because everybody hates Cruz. But it's like
– he has a great logo, though, you know? It just really
– yeah.
His branding is amazing.
Wait, yeah. What was he going to do with that logo? Just let it sit there?
Yeah. I mean, Beyonce was a fan at some point, so what are you going to do?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think – okay, here's my feelings about the debate. I felt so good about the first night. And I'm so sorry to the listeners that we're not going to be able to talk about the second night, but I felt so good about this first night. I just felt like there was no personal attacks. There was nothing.
It was classy, yeah.
Everything was so classy. Everyone was smart. There's not one person on the stage that I would be embarrassed for that person.
Oh,
even John Delaney.
I fuck that guy. Sorry, I'm not a fan.
I would not be, and I'm not saying I'm a fan. I'm just like, there wasn't one person that I'm like, oh, I'm so ashamed.
But he might be the one guy that could sway maybe the red vote a little bit, because you need a guy that's kind of like that, the business angle and everything. I know what you're saying.
But he's to me like the Democratic version of like a Tim Pawlenty, where it's just like, you know, okay, on paper he might make look like a centrist candidate, but no one gives a crap. That sort of just play to the middle, like let's all just make tiny little tweaks to the way things have always been. That's kind of out the window.
And he doesn't have a name ID, and he doesn't have that kind of like, he doesn't have anything about his own. He's not terribly charismatic. Like there's just nothing about him that.
Well, Cory Booker, I feel like he was like the stage hog of the whole thing. Like,
yeah, and he spoke for the most minutes or whatever of all of the candidates.
I'm sexy Shrek.
I mean, so I felt really good about the night, and then I've been an Elizabeth Warren fan, guys. I think the listeners know
she's my candidate.
She's my candidate, and she's also the candidate of Andy in the control room, apparently, who's pumping her fist in the air. But I was just like, you know, I was very tuned into what she was saying because I didn't want her to mess up, and she didn't. She's a pro, and she has a plan for everything. I think it's what I pointed this out on Twitter, that like it's a little bit frustrating that people keep being like, ugh, like, so you, all right, well, Elizabeth, you have a plan for everything. What's your plan for Mitch McConnell, you know? And of course, she's like capitalized that on that and made t-shirts, like turned it into like a fun thing about her. But I also am like, why are we making this like it's a weird thing? We should not be framing it that it's weird that she has a plan for everything. No. Everyone on the stage should in fact have a plan for everything, or get out of my face, I'm not interested. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what is your whole point in running for president if you don't have a plan for everything?
Yeah, I'm really not into the sort of plausible deniability candidate at this point, that it's like, I'm going to be really vague and fuzzy so that in a general election I don't have to walk anything back, which is the way I feel like a lot of these candidates are. It's like, I would rather just somebody dig in her heels and say, this is what I stand for. I know exactly where she stands on pretty much every issue.
Yep.
And I know why she's running. I know what her you know, raison d'etre is, which is not something I can say for a lot of candidates, even some of the ones that I really respect as people. I haven't really seen a concise narrative for this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
More than just like be a progressive.
And I really like her, and I want to like her more, but being a member of Choctaw Nation from Durant, Oklahoma, that stuff about, you know, with the 23andMe, it really kind of soiled. I mean, my grandfather, you know, lived his whole life on a reservation, so I'm legit. I don't need a test, you know, to claim my tribe. And I felt like that last night helped a lot. It helped me kind of like see that we do need somebody that's going to get stuff done. But at the same time, it's like the way she interacted with Trump about that whole thing, just really, you know. And unfortunately, I'm like the average American, where it takes more than just, you know, great politics to elect somebody.
Isn't it weird, though? I mean, you know, and this is where I wouldn't say I give Trump credit, but it's just like his shock and awe campaign of utter incompetence and stupidity has made it so that he can, you know, he does something more embarrassing than Elizabeth Warren's 23andMe thing every day.
Oh,
every day he does something
worse
than that. But because she had this one flub this one thing that she played badly, that's a brand on her.
Yeah.
You know, that she has to spend the next year and a half trying to rub off.
Dustin, I wonder, is there something she could say that would clean that up for you?
I think she could, you know, go out of her way to help those people, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Native Americans are we're just an afterthought. I feel
completely.
Like nobody, you know, is trying to help these people. And every problem that needs to be fixed in America is doubled on a reservation.
Yeah.
You know, with poverty and education and, you know, healthcare, those things, you know, they're just trailer parks that are just, you know, yeah. in the middle of nowhere that nobody's really, you know, protecting.
Paying attention to.
People are like, you know, well, they got the casinos. It's like, no, they don't. There's like six guys that have the casinos.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It's like that money's not being flushed back into the tribe. So, I mean, she could go out of her way to help, you know, just kind of in that campaign towards these certain tribes that really need help.
It would be interesting if she did make it through the primary. Like, would she want to put a lot of focus on helping the Native American community as a way of sort of, you know, penance or whatever? Or would she just not want to even go near it just to, like,
or she
not
just comes
bring
out,
that back?
Comes out in a headdress. Like, she just
exactly, yeah.
wore paint. She's like, don't playing a drum, you know?
Okay, what did you guys think of Jay Inslee's single issue candidacy?
Well, he's the first to do everything. I just don't know if you know that. First to help women, the first to, like, everything was the first for him, which is hilarious.
Well, he does have, I mean, he's a governor, right?
Yeah.
Like, he has had executive experience in a way that a lot of the candidates on stage didn't, you know? So I feel like that, you know, there was some truth to that.
Yeah, but the right to choose thing was a little weird with all the women on it.
Yeah, I agree.
And it is, like, first of all, I didn't realize he was such a massive dude. He's huge. That, like he was almost as tall as de Blasio and, like, built like a linebacker.
I think Castro's just so small that he looked
that
huge.
That might be what it is. Yeah, he was next to Delaney, who's a Jim Henson creation. But, I mean, I, you know, in a 1994, you know, 1996 presidential election, somebody like Jay Inslee checks all the boxes, like, visually in terms of, like, looks like a politician and all that.
Yeah.
And I actually think he's pretty, you know, some of his climate stuff is pretty radical or whatever. But I think for a lot of people, whether you want to say it's good or bad, they kind of see somebody like Jay Inslee and they're like, yeah, we've had you already.
Yeah,
like, we've done you.
Yeah. I was, you know, again, Elizabeth Warren is my candidate, but, like, I was like, you know, this is the single issue. This is the single issue, and that this is the thing we should kind of all be voting on, you know? So whoever your candidate is, if they don't have a fucking really hardcore environmental policy, ditch them, you know? So I feel like if that's going to be his role in the race is just to remind everybody of that, I'm happy he's doing it. And maybe that's literally just it.
I mean, you know, when Bernie started running in 2016, I mean, he was running mostly as a ballast to try to drag Hillary to the left. It was only when people started to buy into it that I don't think he had any thought that he was going to get as close as he did when he started his campaign. It seemed like
neither did Trump.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I just want to say, I don't think anybody had a sense of humor last night. Well,
no.
How could you have? I mean, you're talking about dead
Clinton
immigrant
had
children.
A sense of humor. Obama had a sense of humor. I'm just saying
it's not a funny time, man.
Not a funny time, but it is a time of, you know, charisma does get votes. And you do. They're not all like you, where you're on top of everything. Most of America just needs, they want, you know, somebody that can, they want to listen to. They want to listen to.
They're going
to
remember, like, funny moments and stuff. That.
Just, I mean, a little
Amy
bit of charisma.
Amy Klobuchar had like a minute of that. Although I think all together,
she's apparently mean to everybody.
That story I think still lingers. Yeah.
Where's my salad fork? Where is it?
By the way, eating salad with a comb to me is awesome. I think that's a pretty fucking resourceful, pragmatic way.
I kind of like her, actually. I don't know. She seems like a go-getter, man.
I mean, she seems like
she really does.
You know, like a work ethic. You know,
she's more of
like
a leader.
Driven. Yeah, I mean,
than Elizabeth Warren for me. I don't know. She just feels like that.
Interesting.
Yeah, more of a politician. Just like, I don't know.
Interesting.
They get stuff done, like a Hillary type. You know.
Right. it's interesting because I worry that saying Hillary type for anybody is bad. But it was interesting. There were three women on the stage. Tulsi Gabbard was one of them. Did she make any waves for you guys?
I will say that, you know, I have a real bone. Like, I'm not a fan of hers, mostly just because and again, some of it is because I think her online fans are such douchebags, like the sort of Twitter contingent.
Yeah.
And that's something I've got to get out of my head. And also that she, you know, has not a great past with LGBT issues and things like that. But she is clear. Like you understand where she stands, which I do appreciate, you know.
Yeah, she was.
At least when it comes to foreign
policy. She was
policy.
Like, you know, Danny Chunging a little bit. Like, you know, the Veep reference of, like, constantly mentioning her service, which is, I think that's, even though it is ridiculous in Danny Chunging and it has been satirized, I think that she needs to differentiate herself, and everyone can walk away from that debate being like, she's the one who served. Mm-hmm. And that's a clear thing.
Yeah, I mean, Buttigieg is going to do the same thing tonight. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
And she has that awesome little Storm from X-Men, little streak in her hair.
Yes.
I always think that's cool.
I kind of thought she had a baller look.
She looked great. She looked the best. She definitely, like, presentable.
She
like,
did.
She was, you know.
She did.
Can I just, my one sexist joke?
Because
obviously, men all just wear navy blue suits. It's boring, whatever. Yeah. And so it feels kind of ridiculous to make fun of the way women dress or whatever. But
please.
I will say, after watching Elizabeth Warren for the last few months, she dresses like the human resources director on the Starship Enterprise. And now that you have that in your head, you will never be able to see it or not think that.
No, it's what killed Hillary with a lot of people.
But specifically, because she always wears like
about the Starship Enterprise. Was there an HR director?
No, that's what I'm saying. But she looks like like an office worker in space.
Okay.
She wears the black top and the black pants, and then this jacket that's not really quite a jacket that you've ever seen before. It's the collars are really short, and the sleeves only are three quarters.
It's actually a traditional Native American.
No,
Okay. Well. You made fun of your own candidate's outfit, and I would just like to point that out. Okay, well, we'll see what happens tonight. I mean, do you think everyone's talking about tonight's debate as like more of the, what is it?
Well, who do you think's the best under 60? Because that's really what I'm looking for.
How old is
who's the best person under 60?
Okay, got you.
That's really,
I'm not an ageist. I don't give a shit.
I'm a little bit of an ageist. I feel like we need to
you
stop doing
that. You want
to
youthen it up. Okay.
I do. I really feel that that's
who
hope
is the
for
best
me.
Under 60?
Yeah.
From Corey? Tonight, Corey.
Know. Probably Corey Booker.
Corey. Yeah. I mean, and you know, it's interesting because Julian Castro, I guess, did have a moment, but like, it didn't super land for me as much, I guess, as it did for a lot of people. I think Cory Booker probably made an impact. And I was reminded, when I very first heard of him years ago, that he was living in the projects in Newark. I was like, that's interesting.
Did he bring that up at all last night?
And you know what? I'm glad he brought that up because that's fucking unusual. People don't do that. People don't like try and maintain a connection to their community in that way.
Yeah.
And he really is. And I think that's admirable.
No, Elvis did that. We lived in his neighborhood, you know.
Did he?
No, he did. He lived kind of in.
I mean, on a palatial estate.
Yeah, but it was still in the neighborhood.
Yeah. He bought three of his blocks in the neighborhood.
In the ghetto.
So I guess we'll see what happens tonight. I mean, do you guys have any predictions about, like, who will be the first to drop out?
Boy, I feel like five people should drop out from last night. Not because they were so embarrassingly bad, but just because it's like, come on, man. There's going to be a fatigue that sets in if some of these people don't drop out.
Yeah,
De Blasio needs to get back to New York.
Oh, my God.
We need to send him a Metro card.
Delaney and Tim Ryan... You know, I'm good with you guys. Thank you for your time. We will get back to you.
Tim Ryan looks like a guy.
We'll keep your resume on file.
Tim Ryan looks like he's just shot up like a neighborhood. Like he's got those eyes that I just can't. Well, he freaks me out.
To me, he looks like a kid in one of those father-son switching movies. Do you know what I mean? Where well, he's actually like an eight-year-old inside that body, and now he's on the stage and he's totally nervous.
He doesn't blink.
He doesn't know what I'm supposed to do. Like, oh my God, I'm on a debate stage.
It's terrible because what we really want out of candidates are really good actors.
Of course.
And it's just not going to happen.
And I, you know, with Tim Ryan, I understand the argument, but I get annoyed by those Democrats who are like, we got to stop being the party of the coast, you know, the elites and the college educators. Like, dude, first of all, okay.
Just as a reminder, Tim Ryan's from Ohio.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, we're people too. You know, people who grew up on the East Coast and people who like went
They're
to
not
like,
an irrelevant population of Americans.
And we're never going to out-dumb Trump. That's not going to happen. So why not embrace who you actually are, which is, no, we are people who care and are engaged and aren't just, you know, because basically what that means is white people.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I've just also never been a fan of regionalism. I'm like, where everyone is just as American as everyone. Everyone stop this. This is ridiculous.
Well, in the same breath, you know, I'm from Texas and everybody just, you know, wraps us up in a big red bow and says, you know, we have no compassion for people and we're not educated and things like that. So it's like, I feel Texas and places like Oklahoma and Alabama, even with all the stuff that's happening, there's still people in those places that want a better, you know, America that's not, you know, biased and all that stuff. So, I just think, I don't know.
Guys, there's
many different types of people in every part of America.
Coat of many colors.
Good clothes.
All right, you guys. You know what we're going to do? We are going to move on to a special segment that we're calling topic number B. So, okay, you guys, this is a very special little segment here. You guys have heard me say this man's name for 154 episodes.
And each time you thought it was a woman.
And you did. You guys, I am sitting with the Gabby Alter.
What's up?
The man behind our theme music and our interstitial music. And I know a lot of you love it because a lot of you have emailed me about this music. And I'm so proud of it. And I love that this is our theme music. And I love that people love it. I'm so happy about that. And what you don't know is that me and Gabby have worked together, oh my God, for so long. Don't date us, Gabby.
No, I'm not going to date us. We've worked together for so long now.
But we have worked together for
yeah,
so
we
long.
Did that movie. We
did my first movie
ever.
Nerdcore Rising. You also wrote music for The Muslims Are Coming.
Right, a couple things.
You wrote music for Third Street Blackout. You wrote basically
it.
All the music.
I scored
music.
It. Well, yeah. No, but I scored it. There were a lot of other people on it.
Yeah, so, all right. Calm down. why don't you let me overcredit you, Gabby?
Just sorry. Okay. Letting it wash over me.
We wrote a musical called The Israeli-Palestinian Conflict, a romantic comedy,
which
will eventually come back to New York and everyone will see it who lives in New York.
Yes.
And then the rest of the country will come to New York.
Totally.
But so we go way fucking back.
Yeah.
And I'm so excited because you have an album now. But before you tell me about that album, that everyone will immediately run and download, I want you to weigh in on our issues. Okay. So quickly, just you're going to give your lightning round. You're a musician. What do you know?
What do I know about anything other than music? Very little, if history bears. No, Bruce Springsteen knows stuff. But I'm not Bruce Springsteen.
You're no Bruce Springsteen,
that's right,
sir.
No.
You know what? I love you more than Bruce Springsteen.
Aw, thanks.
Gabby, what did you think about the first night of the Democratic debates? Who won for you? Who's your candidate?
So I don't have a TV, but I did read the follow-ups.
Like one of the things I hate about you that you don't have a TV. Okay,
no, it's
go
kind
ahead.
Of sad, but anyway, I did read like the follow-up.
Yeah, highlights,
and it sounds like Warren did well.
Yeah,
like she had a strong first half, and then everyone said she faded. Although it sounds like they just asked her a bunch of questions in the beginning and then didn't ask her questions in the middle and the end.
That's maybe what it was.
Because they were like, oh, we gave her too much time.
Okay, whoever the fuck is saying that, she didn't fade. Everyone shut the fuck up. I'm not interested in that kind of
but that's also,
coverage.
That's also like real like e-entertainment type coverage.
You know? Is that where
like,
you get all of your
she
news?
Faded. Yeah, e-entertainment was like, Warren looking smashing. You know? It was like, that's totally irrelevant, guys, and also sexist. No, but she... She said that, like, she started off and said this thing about how, the economy's doing well, but not for most people. And it's
that's
like,
how you feel.
That's true.
It's true.
It's like, yeah, good job, guys. You've made this an incredibly great economy
for
the wealthy. Yeah. So that's not great. And so she pointed that out, and that was great. And then she came up with she came on strong with the whole healthcare for all thing, which
and
I personally,
into.
I'm
all
into
right.
it. Yeah.
Is she your candidate?
Well, I don't know yet, actually. No. I mean, I like her and Bernie's positions the best.
Okay.
And I like the guy who's his only thing is the
climate change. I said the same thing.
Yeah, because like they apparently
because he's right.
He's right, and
climate
also
climate change is the only issue.
And for some reason, like he was the only one that talked about it last night, right? Like there was that's why I read. I don't know, but I read that.
Yeah, there was some talkings about it, but I mean, obviously he was
marginal.
The strongest.
Yeah.
He was the strongest. Okay, what do you think about the anti-college movement?
Well,
did you like going to college?
I had mixed feelings about it, and which is now this is, public knowledge. But I mean, there were really good things about college. And I also thought there were some really weird things about college. I think there's just weird stuff about, look, I mean, college is this important, I guess, bridge, like in the class.
Yeah.
In the class system, it's like how you move up the class ladder.
Yeah.
Although not necessarily anymore.
Right.
And now everyone's in debt. I mean, I think if everybody were not
that
in debt.
That is the fucking problem.
If everyone were not in debt. But I think also what I read about these alternative institutions is that they're sort of addressing this problem that college doesn't really, it's getting more specialized apparently and very sort of like practical oriented, but doesn't address like why you're learning things. And I think that's valid. I mean, I think also probably there are still colleges that do. I mean, my college, Wesleyan, was all about like, you have to look into the past and the present and understand what the meaning of life is. And the future. Yeah. So I think there are probably still colleges doing that. And then there's probably colleges that aren't.
Okay.
And so that's addressing that void.
Got it. I kind of felt like mine did. So yeah, like you.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, what do you think of the, okay, so this will end up being our last topic.
Okay.
And listeners don't know this yet. So we're just priming them.
Priming.
This is a little teaser.
Got it.
What are your thoughts on the ban on sexist ads in the UK?
It's funny because a couple of the articles were so mad. They were like, this is not the way to solve it. First of all, nobody ever got sexist looking at an ad. And second of all, like, we're smart people. Don't dumb us down by being a nanny state. And I'm like, first of all, there's plenty of research that shows that ads and pop culture absolutely do influence people's sexist attitudes and racist and like all that shit. Excuse me, stop. So
no, we say
oh, you
shit
can swear.
On the show.
I forgot. Yeah, it's your show.
We prefer the word shit to stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Nice, but no. But I think honestly, that is a load of crap. That like those things don't really deeply influence people. Now, what to do about that? Should you outlaw ads? I don't know. I mean, I kind of feel like
it's a little First Amendment and constitutionally for America.
I think for America, it's
but
a little
for the
tough.
UK, it's like it's kind of interesting.
I think it's an interesting experiment. Yeah. I think this. Like, I think it'd be cool if states, like, there were, like, enough people lobbied, to get stuff passed so that you had to, you had to look at stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, as a
you know what?
Like,
you're a fucking musician. What the fuck do you know? You know what I mean? As I've always said about you.
At the end
you.
Of the day.
At the end of the day. Okay, Gabi, I'm so excited about your album. What is it called? And how can people get it?
It's called Yes Gabriel, and that is the name of sort of my singer-songwriter project, because I do other stuff like write music for your movies.
He's written musicals, guys.
And I've written musicals, you guys. Not musicals, as everyone I say, when I meet people, it's like, oh, have you written anything I've heard of? No.
Because anyone's only ever heard of Hamilton.
No, I mean, people have heard
stuff on
Broadway.
I mean, you know what I mean?
Broadway.
There's like, they're going to be like, oh, did you write Bye Bye Birdie? No, I didn't write that.
Yeah, no, I didn't Bye Bye Birdie.
You know what I mean? So,
like, yeah, I know. I bet the people from Come From Away, like, did you write anything? Yeah, Come From Away. It won all of the Tonys and is like a huge runaway hit. And they're like, Come From Away. Interesting.
Right.
Is it like Hamilton? No, it's not like Hamilton. It's a tough thing to be in that business and nobody's heard of you.
Oh, it's so tough. In the limited experience that we've had together in that business,
oh
I
God.
Found it extremely difficult.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy. But anyway, Yeah. So I've done
so
a lot
yes,
of musical.
Gabriel.
So Yes, Gabriel is the singer-songwriter thing, and I just did it mostly at home. I recorded, which makes it sound like it would sound bad, but now I spend so much time on it, and I had good musicians.
You don't need to,
and,
for, don't need to fucking, right, come on. Yeah. For, also, Gabi has access to literally all of the best singers and musicians in all of New York. So that's
So there's that.
That.
But then I played a lot of the instruments myself.
Because you're a fucking polymath, ridiculous human being. Really, really, really one of the most talented musicians I've ever met. Yeah. And I live in New York, so I've met a lot of musicians. I'm in the arts, so that's saying a lot. I would like it to be a compliment that everyone takes to heart so that they download this album.
That would be amazing. Believe McGee, believe her.
We're actually going to play a song at the end of the episode. Oh, cool. What's the song called?
It's called Fall Asleep.
Okay, Fall Asleep. So we're going to play that song. And then, Gabi, where can they see you perform?
I'm going to be doing a record release party, if you happen to live in New York, at Rockwood Music Hall Stage 2, which is in Lower East Side. And we're playing July 10th at 8 p.m.
Rockwood Music Hall, July 10th, you guys.
It's going to be huge.
Yes, Gabriel. Yes, Gabriel is the name of the album. It's the name of the project. Gabi Alter is the name of the man. You've heard his name 154 times. And I'm so happy to keep saying it every single week because you're so great. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Gabi.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money. And because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry. Thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you. So you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a like a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing losing that money? I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Oh my God. You guys have heard me talk about Paint Your Life before, and I'm excited to talk about it again because I had a painting of my baby done at paintyourlife.com, and I gave it as a gift to my parents, and minds were lost. It's a terrific gift. At Paint Your Life, you basically have an original painting done by a world-class artist, and it's done by hand from a photo. And it's so effective, and it looks so lovely. I've posted mine on Instagram. You can see it. You can do it. You know, I did it for my baby. You could do it for any family member. There's all these paintings of dogs, which I would love to get a painting done of my dog, if we're honest. And it's a true painting done by hand. And it makes the perfect gift. It really does. I can attest to that. You choose the artist whose work you most admire, and you work with them throughout the process until every detail is perfect. Like, I made a little note to my artist, like, oh, could you remove the logo on the outfit? Like, it was weirdly prominent. And they take all that stuff into consideration. It's really highly quality controlled. I mean, it's great. And there's no risk. If you don't love the final painting, your money is refunded. With Paint Your Life, you get your favorite memories transformed into a work of art that'll be cherished changed forever. And right now, as a limited time offer, you get 30% off your painting and free shipping. So to get the special offer, you just text the word FAKE to 484848. That's F-A-K-E, FAKE, to 484848. So again, you're just going to go ahead and text the word FAKE to 484848. And don't forget that message and data rates might apply. But totally go for it. It's such a great gift. Getting into debt is easy, and getting out is hard. Thankfully, there's Upstart.com, the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter interest rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. I spent many years of my life in significant credit card debt. Many years of my life. And Upstart would have been so helpful to me if it was around. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter interest rate. They make it fast, simple, easy to check your rate. And they make it, it's just a few minutes without affecting your credit score, which is a big deal. Once the loan is approved, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 200,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards, student loans, to fund their wedding, to make a large purchase. You can basically free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. Now, see why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/fake to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate takes only a few minutes, and it won't affect your credit. That's upstart.com/fake. And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. Okay, you guys, ever since Mark Zuckerberg dropped out of college and ruined our lives, and ever since YouTube stars with no actionable skills started earning real money, and ever since Malia Obama took a gap year, I feel like going to college has become less and less of an obvious choice, especially among the well-heeled. So let's talk about the growing anti-college movement. But first, did you guys go to college? And what do you feel about that choice?
Sort of went to college, art school. Okay. It's kind of like college. We wrote maybe three papers, you know.
So. Which school was that?
Parsons.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it had the under the umbrella of education.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was just a lot of, you know, just throwing paint on the canvas and being goofy and running around New York.
Well, but,
I needed it, though. Yeah. College for me was, it was a weird, how I ended up, you know. I met a girl in high school that was a Mormon. And so this whole thing, I was just like, you know, and I'll go to the Navy. And then I chose to be a Mormon missionary over joining the Navy. And so I was a missionary, Mormon church, and went to South America.
Despite having not grown up as a Mormon.
No. It was a girl in high school.
Got
like,
you.
Total
you
convert.
Like a
pretty
nice,
girl,
okay.
Pretty girl from Utah. That happens every time.
Yeah. And that'll turn someone Mormon.
Yeah. And I was a horrible.
Did you wear the short sleeve shirt?
I did with the name tag
nice.
And everything.
Oh
my with the God. Bike. Yeah. And I was
this
a very poor student. Very poor student. And
terrible
so
student.
What happened was you do this mission. You go on a mission for the Mormon church. They'll help you kind of afterwards. And they got me into this junior college in Rexburg, Idaho. It was kind of like the junior BYU. And so I was able to get my grades up and kind of like, you know, figure out how to be a student.
Yeah.
And then I was able to transfer to Parsons, which is my dream school here in Manhattan. So
what?
I had to go through this. I had to basically, you know, manipulate people into this religion, which would help me become a good student and get into college. So it was worth it. It was worth my manipulation.
So where did they send you on the mission?
Chile, Santiago.
So you were there for
2 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
Were you a Mormon? Are you still a Mormon?
No.
So you were a Mormon just for those 4 years?
I was a Mormon for about 6 years.
For six years.
So let's say a year before and then about, you know, a couple years after. So
until
I got
like
to New York.
The most circuitous and interesting path to college
that I've heard. Yeah, it was the weirdest thing.
And then now... You went to your dream school and you loved it.
I did. I loved art school, you know, the sense, because I didn't know, you know, we're all artists now, so I'm sure we all had a different path. But I what I like about college is just learning how to interact with people and just, you know, finding yourself and whatever. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's not for everybody. I don't think college is, you know, but nobody pushed me in the right direction. I had to find that, and college helped me kind of find what direction I wanted to go.
Christian, what was your experience?
I went to a very tiny boutique school called New York University. It was really intimate, small class sizes. And yes, I was a Tisch School of the Arts child. But yeah, I mean, I loved college. No, that's not true. I didn't. I liked, I needed, for me, you know, college meant something. I do think that we've kind of been pushed into this idea that everyone should go to college. And I think that's what you're seeing people rebel against. It's like, what? So I'm spending $120,000, you know, for what? You know, for me, I really like college. I went to a performing arts school for my last 2 years of high school. And so I had already lived, you know, in a dorm for 2 years. And so I didn't really want the whole campus thing. And so for me, NYU was great because it was kind of like I was already living in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, I lived in a dorm for 3 semesters in college, but then I just lived in an apartment. And, you know, I loved my classes. I don't have any love for NYU as an institution. Like, I would never give them a dollar ever.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Ever.
And then, and do you, like, do you have any regrets?
Well, when I was doing a lot of colleges as a comedian, sometimes I would go to one of those campuses with the quad and all that.
Yeah.
And I would think to myself, like, oh, this could have been a fun way to fuck around for 4 years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it is a little different when you're just living in the East Village in an apartment.
Right.
You know, it's not quite the same college experience. But no, I think, I mean, you know, I probably maybe would have done like a year abroad. And I do think that maybe it would have been, since I knew I was going to end up in New York, I wish that maybe I'd gone somewhere else just to experience a different
city, a different
town.
I had a very, compared to you guys, a totally classic college experience. You know, I went to undergrad, I went to Cornell, and then grad school, I went to Columbia. So I had that urban grad school experience. But then, but undergrad was very much a quad, the frisbees, the like, you know, not that I was playing frisbee, but just that I think it's
but even Columbia is a little bit like
Columbia's a little
I
bit like that.
Yeah.
We have the quad at Columbia. At
it's
least.
Like a little enclosed campus.
Mini campus. Compared to Columbia, really. I mean, compared to Cornell, like really small. Like Cornell is like this big, beautiful, really old build. I mean, it's just like it's idyllic, really beautiful. And I think having done that, like academically, just rigorous. And I mean, compared even to Columbia, like I felt like I got so much like support and attention from professors, and they were all there for you, and you could get any kind of support you needed anytime. Like it was just fully resourced. It was, I'm the kind of person that like totally wants my kid to go to Cornell, and like, and I have a hard time with the idea of like a kid not going to college. You know, I'm so entrenched, and And as a kid, I mean, I was just hell-bent on going to an Ivy League school and having you know. And I did that. And I'm so entrenched in the idea that college is a net good for people, that the idea of this anti-college movement, I think, is I don't know. It makes me a little sad, I guess.
It makes me sad, too. But, you know, things do change. And also, I mean, when I look back at like my favorite books and the books that I still think about that factor into my life, like, philosophy type stuff or, you know, plays that really meant a lot to me, most of them were stuff I read in college. And so I'm 46 now. And the fact that I'm still thinking of books that I read when I was 20, you know, that tells me that college meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, we didn't have the internet. We didn't have online, you know, capabilities to find the stuff out on our own. Everything is in flux and changing. And so the idea that college should just be sort of fixed in amber, that this is what it is, especially for people who, you know, when our parents were growing up, it's like a college diploma to our generation is what a high school diploma was. It's sort of like the minimum you need now to apply for a job. And that seems ridiculous if if you want to be an accountant, you can go to a fucking trade school and learn how to be an accountant.
Right.
Absolutely. I think the focus should be before college when it comes to education in this country. And I don't think people pay attention to students enough. You know, like if you see, when you catch a kid spray painting something on the wall, maybe encourage that kid to go to art. You know, you catch the class clown in the back, maybe take him to an open mic. You know, like there's things that we can develop early in children instead of like forcing them. Because I, you know, the idea of math would make me sweat, but I was good at painting and other things. So it's like, I think we should really focus on what kids are good at. And if, you know, and like kind of, there was a show that came out. It was like a reality show. It was a horrible show, but they had all these young children and it was kind of a Lord of the Flies kind of thing. They put them in this, it was on Fox. It was like four episodes and they put them on in like a little Western town and they just basically kind of just to see what they would end up doing, how they would structure a government and how they would like.
How old were they?
They were young. It went off real quick.
Like under
like 10. Okay, yeah. Some kids were crying in the corner and there'd be one bully kid that was like, I'm going to like change this. And like they would figure out how to eat and how to, it was a whole thing. But it's interesting to just find out what a kid's good at. And they're really, I think that's what we need more mentors in this, in this country.
I mean, you know. Can I also just say, so a lot of my family's in Iran, as people know, a lot, and I spent a lot of time living in France. It's not a big deal. And so
really?
I know.
And you still said, s'il vous plaît?
écoute, je parle français, en fait. Okay, so no, I hate myself. And I encounter a lot of people who like the fact that they did calculus in high school was a given. It's not like for me to do it, it was like I was in an AP class and it was a bit, I worked really hard and I got to, you know what I mean? But like it wasn't a standard in where I went to high school for like people to end up doing calculus, but it was totally standard. Every high school student in Iran is like doing high level math.
Yeah.
In France, they're doing, I mean, their education up until high school is amazing. They're so much better prepared for once they.
No, is this every kid in Iran or is there any, like, I don't know. Like, is there any sort of class?
Obviously, you know? I have no idea. But, I just know from like the middle class and lower middle class family members that I have, they're just ridiculously better prepared graduating from high school than I felt like I was or that my peers were.
Was there a tiger parent mentality at all?
It's just culturally expected for you to do well. It's just so much more culturally expected. In Iran, I don't know. In France, I think it's a little more, you know, it's different. But in Iran, it's just like there isn't a like, hey, you better do your homework. Like people are just doing their homework. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They don't need to be forced into it. And so I think part of the thing with us is that college actually does have a huge effect because high school isn't having as much of an effect as it could.
Yeah.
And so maybe there's something there. So there's this movement of these communitarian pragmatist schools that where basically it's like liberal arts for the mind, labor for the body, and an ethos of secular monasticism for the spirit. I'm quoting a New York Times article on the anti-college movement. And
get you a job. Yeah.
Right. So it's like there's, you know, and one minute they might read Plato, the next minute they might read something about labor movements, you know, and then the next minute they might be plowing fields. And there are these, you know, some of them are functioning as like a year abroad kind of thing. Some of them are, you can get college credit. Some of them are just a gap year type of program. What do you think about these types of programs?
I mean, you know, your joke is like true, like that'll get you a job or whatever. Yeah. But I do think that there's probably some use into that it does seem to be like, all right, how do we actually create a good adult as opposed to just funnel them through the sort of system we've always done? Like rather than read the 10 books that everybody reads or, you know, like how do we it does seem like kind of a creative approach to what the end result is like, how do we create adults that are going to be like sensate, but like know how to do stuff, but aren't, you know, just.
Yeah. It's also a weird thing because
scrubs.
I feel like a broken system sometimes elevates people to achieve things. So it's, you know, it's like my family not wanting me to do something would make me want to pursue that sometimes.
Yeah.
So it's like this weird thing where it's just like, you don't know where you're going to end up, the perfect education, the perfect structure may not help that person if they don't have adversity against it. And, you know, and what you were saying about trade schools, there's not going to, who, what millennial is going to want to be a plumber? Meanwhile, that's what's going to make you way more money than a cubicle office job.
That's one of the few jobs that's actually going to be around.
Yes. Right, things like that. Carpenters and things. Yeah. I mean.
Well, I mean, there should be a program on how to be an influencer, and then maybe that.
It's crazy how many, maybe this is just old person talking, but it's like, I think that for like young white people, they think that influencer is just like a giant field that anyone can join. Like the same way they would say like kids growing up in the projects would say, I'm going to play in the NBA one day. It's like, you know, there's only like 50 of those jobs, right? You know what I mean? It's like crazy how many people online like just they think influencer. That's what my career is going
to
be.
You know, it's funny. I tried to be a big brother, be part of the Big Brother organization. And they saw my stand up and they said I wasn't deemed like suitable to like encourage a youth because of my stand-up, because I had some edgy stuff online or something, and I was just I was mortified.
No. I've never tried to be a part of that program, but oh my god,
I was really devastated because I don't want to have children, but I wanted to, you know. And I was like, are you kidding me? Because of some dirty jokes I did on Showtime, I couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable.
That's insane.
Yeah, I'm still mad about it.
No, I would be totally pissed. I mean, it's interesting because I, you know, part of these like weird farm style schools that are growing in popularity around the country. One of them's called like the Wayfinding Academy and a Ready Academy or whatever. I think part of them is that they're offering, you know, they're not being so prescribed in the curriculum. So like if you might have a freshman survey course on philosophy and you'll go through the like 10 philosophers that everybody goes through, and like that's what it, you know, and but they're like trying to break that mold. But part of me is a little bit like, you know, they're still not learning a wage earning, like there's still nothing practical about what they're doing. There might be something practical in the physical labor that they're going through, like with the farm work and stuff like that. But in general, again, like, you know, metallurgy and plumbing and those kind of practical skills are not, you know, what's happening.
Well, there's
here.
A quote in that Times article. It said, you know, we don't want to, you know, it's something very paraphrasing here, but very paraphrasing. Anyway, that we want to break the idea that of college students as just being future wage earners, which I understand that they want to, they in their mind, they're kind of saying the opposite of what we're saying. It's like, you know, going to college is not just about like, how will I eventually enter the capitalist system and make money? But, you know, great that you're creating these wonderful human beings who can kind of see a holistic view of the universe. But do you see how far that gets you? Actually, after college, you know, like, there does have to be some nod to here's how you will survive and pay for food that you put in your mouth.
No, exactly. Like, I mean, we are supposed to be raising future wage earners. Like, I don't know. Is that too? Also, there's, you know, when we're trying to address the question of like, what is my purpose and what does it all mean? Like, some of these kind of alternative things are really trying to address those questions. Yeah. I don't care. Like, I want you to be a positive force in your community and a productive force in your community. Yeah.
And we do need to embrace that more, because I feel like there's a condescension that happens with the liberals and stuff, like where I come from. And it's okay to have a regular job.
Yeah, like it's okay.
You don't have to look down on that.
We look at every job as like day job. You know, like,
right.
And it's hard for me. And I think there's condescension going on in both ways. Like, you know, for someone like me, I don't get fulfillment out of domestic type stuff. That's just not where I get my rocks off. Whereas a lot of people, it's like, I work so that I can enjoy my family and my kids and all those things. And I respect that. That's just not where, you know, where I get my rocks off. Shit, I had a point. Now it's gone. Sorry.
All right, you guys. Well, I blew through our time, so we're just going to end it there. But I'm so curious what people think about the anti-college movement, because it's not only just an anti-college movement. It's like, don't go to college. Also, maybe go to these alternative colleges that are in farms and rural areas.
Just very quickly, Christian. I think Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it's you and your universe and how to be a better person. Tuesday and Thursday, it's here's how to fucking make some money.
Yeah,
and that's how they should do it.
Nice.
Nice. Christian just founded a university.
He did.
And
I'd go to that.
Yeah, that sounds fucking great. Although I still want my kid to just go to a traditional college.
Yeah.
You want
I want her
pennant.
To have a quad. I want her a fucking frisbee. I want all of that shit.
And
all
don't right. do stand-up comedy. We're full.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Don't. Yeah, I very yes. much want a progeny
yeah.
who is not interested in the arts. So that's my little dream. Okay, let's hope she's not creative.
Put that crayon down. Put it down. Pick up that calculator.
All right, you guys. I'm springing this on you because I just suddenly feel really terrible with this about this next topic number C. Real quick, just a couple minutes here. Donald Trump is being accused of rape from 1996 by a woman named E. Jean Carroll. She was like an advice columnist, I think. And it's weird because it came out, the news broke like last Friday. It kind of got a little bit of attention, not really. Trump said, come on, she's not my type. I think that was his response to it. But I don't even know. It like kind of didn't get traction. And now I feel weird that it hasn't gotten traction. And so anyways, just like quick reactions to this thing.
I know.
Not his type to rape. Like, is that what he's saying?
Yes.
It's like,
oh,
if she was,
God, I know.
You know, a big blonde.
It says a lot about all of us, and I include myself in this, that we all, I think a lot of people had that sort of idea of like, well, this isn't going to go anywhere, so why are we going to, like, because he's... you can see how it will play out. And that's, I'm not justifying that, but it made me feel sad for myself. Because I can't pretend that all of a sudden
you got enraged or moved.
or just that I couldn't immediately see how it's going to play out in my head.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, with the grab the pussy thing, you thought that was the end.
Yeah,
when that happened, you thought that was, you know, there's no way he's going to get elected after that.
Yeah,
and then it's been one thing after another after another after another, and then it just
the
you
people
feel numb
who
to
made
it.
The deal with the devil have made their deal, and they're in for a pound. You know, and
I think the same problem. I mean, like the thing I experienced was just the same of like, oh, this is not going to happen. This doesn't matter. Like it's not going to matter. It matters to me. It matters to like, but I've already been angry about all of the women that have come out. You know what I mean? And it hasn't. So it just feels, like a little bit helpless.
To me, all it can do for me in a sort of positive way is like, all right, well, maybe I'll phone bank a little harder next time. You know, if nothing else, maybe it'll just make me, you know, donate a little bit more of my time to in 2020. You know, other than that, I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah. All right. Well, like, guys, let me know. I don't know. I just felt like we had to say something.
But you're right. I mean, the mere fact that, you know, it feels not like an afterthought, but it feels almost like a cul-de-sac of a conversation.
Yeah.
Just shows what a sad state we're
just
in.
Just numb. It's horrible that I'm numb. I don't want to be numb.
Oh, it's horrible. Yeah. I feel numb and I'm also angry at the same time. Numb and angry at the same time. Okay, let us move on to topic number three. Okay, so the UK passed a new law banning sexist ads. So basically, the ladies can't be the only ones vacuuming, or men can't be shown as having no idea how to change a diaper, or like hot bitches can't be depicted on an ad to get you to buy a weight loss product. These are the types of regulations that are now in place in the UK. What did you guys think of this ban?
Doomed to failure. Like,
sex sells. Are you crazy?
Well, I just don't. How do you enforce something like this? Like, I don't.
Well, I mean, they have a board who will be looking at every ad and then saying whether or not it can go. I mean, they have an enforcement mechanism.
It was funny, my girl and I, Leah, we've been watching Mad Men lately, you know, just catching up, and she hadn't seen it. And it's amazing all the manipulation that they did to try to, you know, sell cigarettes and convince people and things. I don't know. I think I don't like it when I see an ad and the dad's always dumb. Like, I feel mm-hmm. that offends me a little bit. Where it's always just like, the woman knows everything. And then the dad's like, well, I don't know, whatever she wants. You know, there's a lot of that happening. But when it comes to, I remember when I was a kid, there was a movie with Michael Keaton, Mr. Mom. I don't know if you saw that when you were growing up. But I feel that was like it. And it was funny because at that time it felt outrageous that the man would clean the house and like take care of the kids and do all the thing. And obviously, but one thing that was good about it is it showed how hard it is. And like, he was just like, he couldn't pull it off. He was like, oh, it was just like a last minute. And he's trying to get all the help from all the people in the neighborhood. Like, it was just showed how difficult it is to raise a family. But I don't know. When it comes to advertisement, I don't think we're going to be able to do that in America because...
So it's so complicated because I think the argument I read a couple of like conservative reactions to the law. This one columnist, I mean, I think he's a conservative. I don't know. His name is George Harrison, and it was in Spiked. I guess that's one of their little itty bitty papers over there. know why I'm being so demeaning to like the entire UK. It said what adverts don't do is put women off becoming scientists or convince men that it's okay to leave all the cleaning to their wives. The point I think, you know, the point he's trying to make is that an advert's not going to convince you to do, you know, be or not be a scientist. What do you think of that argument? Do these advertisements have an effect on us in a way? Are we giving these advertisements more credit than they deserve?
I don't know. You know, when it comes to like weight loss and then you see a woman in a bikini, you know, it's, you know, I think Dove and things like that, they over the years, they, you know, tried to say that, you know, not all bodies have to be this way, you know? So I don't think that, I think the way we look at things is a personal thing, but I think if seeing some woman in a bikini helps you maybe lose a few pounds and it's like you aspire to that as long as it's not in a sick way, I don't think it's a horrible thing. I don't know. And it's,
I mean, you know, there is that whole, you know, if you see it, you can be it idea. That,
yeah,
you
it's
know,
not horrible.
I just don't, first of all, I don't like anything that feeds into conservatives sort of martyr complex or of like, you know, the Orwellian state telling us how to live. Like, it's just,
right.
You know, to me, I don't know. I just don't think it's effective. And also, I think the whole idea of this putting a lot of emphasis on TV ads feels very 20 years ago. You know, that's really not how advertising affects us, affects our parents and, you know, me to a degree. But I don't think if you're 24 years old, whatever the TV ads are, like, you know, you're advertised to and you're marketed to in a much more granular individual level now with, you know, Facebook ads and things like that, you know, things that are actually geared towards you particularly.
Right, targeted.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't think, it just seems like a silly, it seems like it's not going to help a lot and it has the potential of just being painted with such a brush. It will be the punching bag of every quote-unquote free speech douchebag online in England, you know.
Right, right. I mean...
To no reasonable effect.
So I guess I will push back on that, which is to say that I think when you're living... And then it's different in different parts of the country. I think when you're in a driving city, you know, you might see billboards and stuff like that. And even if you're not, even if those things aren't working on you directly, if you're like, I don't, you know, I'm not moved by billboards, they're working on your subconscious. And in New York City, you're, you know, there's so much stimulus. You're seeing ads all the time, whether or not you fully register what you're even seeing, but you're seeing them on buses, you're seeing them on cabs, you're seeing them in the subway, you know, you're seeing them and you know, posters around the city, you're seeing mannequins in windows, you're seeing, you know, you're seeing a lot of stuff all the time. And so I do think in a big city context, you are like subject to a lot of ads in an old school way that you may or may not like fully register. And the only reason I realized that I was registering them in some way is that I think I may have mentioned this on this podcast before, but like I went to Cuba. I have a passport, you guys, Cuba. And I went to Cuba and I remember a few days in, they don't have storefronts, right? They're not like selling very much. They have no ads because they're not selling anything. They have murals of Che Guevara. And so a few days in my time in Cuba, I just – and also being around Cubans who I felt didn't have body shame. I don't know. Obviously, I was just a tourist. What the fuck do I know? But I sincerely felt like the women there weren't constantly criticizing themselves over their bodies. And a few days in, started feeling just like weirdly good about myself. And I was like, I am not comfortable with this feeling. Like, I was just like, I need to compare myself to some hot bitches immediately. This is not normal. Like, I don't need to just walk around like I'm a good looking person. What's happening? Right. And I was like, oh my God. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I hadn't seen a hot lady selling mascara. A hot lady selling an outfit, a hot lady selling a fucking plunger. I hadn't seen that in like 3 or 4 days, and my fucking brain calmed down.
Yeah.
And the constant comparisons we make, it just and the yearning for stuff calmed down. Like, I think we see things and we yearn for those things, even if our rational mind is like, you know, I don't need that face highlighter or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you still, there's some animalistic thing of like, I want that. Just like a yearning develops. And when you're not seeing those things, the yearning dies. And it is remarkable what you could do and how calmer you can feel without all of those feelings running around in your subconscious. So I think ads do matter.
That was great, by the way. That was beautiful. That was amazing.
But I bam! Just, you know, and that all totally makes sense. But I just feel like there is such a thing as lived reality. You know, the whole dumb dad thing, you know, the woman cleaning up while the guy just sits there or whatever. Well, that's kind of my relationship with my wife. I mean, it's like the reality is she cleans up shit that I don't think needs to be cleaned up sometimes, you know, and we kind of do fall into those very cliche roles where she's like, you know, like huffing and, you know, grabbing something off underneath. It's like, that was fine. I could have brought that into the kitchen next time I got up. This clearly means more to you than it does to me, you know?
But you're buying her shoes, so it's unconventional.
Exactly.
He walked in with a bag of shoes for his wife.
Spade, baby.
But it is interesting when everyone's attractive. I don't know if you've been in a place like Sweden, but I remember being in Sweden, and that was uncomfortable in another way because, you know, we went to McDonald's and there was like this beautiful tin just dropping fries, and it was just like, what? It was like, you could be a model of my country. Like, what are you doing?
You know, I will say, not necessarily like beautiful, but this sort of a racially awkward moment for me when I went to, I was in Australia for a month, and you see all
we're
these...
such an international crew here.
I know, so...
it's not a big deal. We've all just traveled
there.
Extensively.
I wasn't on walkabout. I was working. But it was strange for me seeing all of these low-income jobs being done by white people.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Like when you go to Portland and shit, that happens.
It made me feel very... hyper aware of how much I take that for granted, that certain cultures, certain jobs are for certain races in America,
it's horrible,
you know,
yeah.
And it made me more attuned to it here when I got back, for sure.
So these are all things that like are working on the way we perceive shit, and that you know, that matters, right? Like if you're only seeing let's say people of color working in, you know, food service in New York City, that's going to work. And you're a young kid, that's going to work on your subconscious in a way. And so that maybe ads could counter that, or maybe, you know, I don't know. Like, but so an ad showing a scientist of color or something like that could be.
Well, that's what's interesting about Hamilton, you know, shows like that,
right,
where they had different, you know, cast.
But if I'm
diversity.
Ace Hardware, it's like, I'm trying to sell shovels. Okay, I'm not trying to change the world. I'm trying to sell shovels.
So you get a woman in a bikini holding a shovel.
I'll buy that shovel. I'll buy that shovel.
all right, you guys. I don't know. Let me know what you think of this new ban of ads in the UK. I find it fascinating. And it does feel like these kinds of laws exist in other countries. Belgium, Norway, I think, have similar laws to varying degrees. So anyways, let me know what you guys think. I'm so curious. You guys, that's the end of the show. How do you feel?
Fun show. I enjoyed it.
Every time I do the show, I spend the last 10 seconds looking back. Is there anything on the show that I am going to regret having said?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Is there anything?
There was that one.
Anything it pulled out of context is going to make it sound
like. The thing is like you did really give us a glimpse into your home life. And I feel
did.
Like that might be uncomfortable. Yeah.
And I did talk
listeners.
About, you know, starting the oncoming race war. I probably shouldn't have mentioned that.
Well, listen, Dustin,
yes.
I want people to be able to follow you and in everything that you do. Can you tell them how they can do that?
At Dustin Chafin on all the social media sites that I'm trying to stay away from. So. I have a timer on my Instagram now. It goes to like, you've been 30 minutes on Instagram.
Wait, really?
Yeah, I have a timer. It tells
me
how long I've been
like
on.
It's an app?
It's part of Instagram. You can like set it to a timer. So it's like
I did not know that.
It'll just ring and say, you've been on for 30 minutes. And so I'm just trying.
Wow.
I'm trying to control that. But I want people to see me
you
on social media.
You still want people, of course.
You want 29 of those 30 minutes to be spent.
Dustin Chafin.
So you can go to DustinChafin.com and all that good stuff.
Subscribe to the podcast.
I'll leave you with this. Please.
As I mentioned, I'm a proud subscriber. I hope you will be too. And but also when you're in town, see Dustin perform stand-up comedies.
I like comedy.
He also might be in your town because he travels a lot. Yeah. So look at his website.
Be in Arizona next month. It'll be fun.
Arizona. Yeah. Christian, where do people find you?
I only do Twitter. That's all I do. I brought it down.
Did you try Instagram and fail or how?
I think I have an Instagram account. I uploaded two pictures of my dog.
Nice. Yeah.
Like the first year, and then nothing since.
Yeah.
I'm just not a picture guy, and
very
I just,
photogenic
I
though.
Difficult.
That's kind of you to say.
Those eyes, come on.
Hey, Christian.
Can you get your hand off my leg, Dustin?
Hey, buddy, I think you're hideous. So
hey, all right, there, that erection goes away now. I am on ye olde Twitter machine at Christ Finnegan. As Nagin mentioned, my new album, 60% Joking.
Yes.
You can get it anywhere you listen to your comedies, Pandora, Spotify.
Don't stream it. Buy
download it.
Download
it.
Please download it.
Yes. And if you're in the New York area, not only do I do comedy like Dustin, sometimes on the same shows, but my wife owns QED Astoria, which is a great performance venue in Astoria, Queens, QEDAstoria.com. It's super great. Please come and
give
her
my God, you guys, it's so great.
It's classes.
It's so lovely and fun and just great. They have a little store even.
Like a little book,
I love it there.
An arts bookstore.
Oh, it's
so great.
They
have weird, fun shows. Like different.
Get a drink. Mm-hmm. You can fucking enjoy some comedy. Oh, it's such a lovely place. Okay. I would like, you guys know where to find me and all the things. Actually, I think it looks like I'm going to be doing Wait in Ye Olde DC. I actually have two DC shows coming up. Look at my website. It doesn't matter. All right. But I would really like to thank the people that make this show happen. That's our producer, Harry Nelson, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, and Gabby Alter, who you just heard from earlier in the show, wrote our theme music, you guys. So you should definitely be downloading his album. And Lily Fleshler helps out with the research. Dear listeners, we'd love to hear from you. So drop us a line at commentsatfakethenation.com or leave us a voicemail at 347-770-4981. Oh my God, you guys have been doing a really great job of like sending me your thoughts on topics, and I'm slowly trying to integrate all that I can. So please keep them coming. For the listener who wants me to do a chat about the old 90s show Northern Exposure with my BFF, we'll see if I ever make that happen. It'll be the most ridiculous and potentially and definitely irrelevant conversation of my history, but it could be fun. You guys, I also would love it if you left a review on Apple Podcasts because it really helps people find the show. Okay, you know that. I hope you're gearing up for a lovely July 4th and that there are many flip-flops and barbecues in your future. Good day. with the song from Yes, Gabriel. Fall asleep. Enjoy.
I guess I'll see you around. Maybe the next time you come into town. It was nice just to spend some time with you. It's been a while since you came round. Do you still have my shirt? The one with faded letters that didn't quite fit. You used to wear it when we went to bed, and I watch you fall asleep in it. Watch you fall asleep. Oh, I'd watch you fall asleep. Guess it would be hard to find some way back to where we fell out of time. Sing the song I knew when I was with you, and remember how it rhymed. Guess I'll eventually forget the way I hated when you smelled like cigarettes, and how you apologized and brushed your teeth so you could kiss me before we fell asleep. Oh, I'd watch you fall asleep. Oh, I'd watch you fall asleep. I'd watch you in your sleep, you're lost and watch you breathe in and out, up and down, closer now than ever. I guess I'll see you again. Maybe someday, I don't know when. When I do, I won't recognize you as the person I knew then. You better catch your train. Take my umbrella in case it starts to rain. When we lay in bed and we fall asleep to it. Oh.